3 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. I'm back from my Montana vacation. Good to be back. Sorry I missed all of the craziness around here at the station this past week. My goodness.
Should you have run into Kevin Costner?
No.
No?
No.
Did you go to his ranch?
No, we didn't.
I'd like to visit his ranch if I was ever there.
No, but you know what? We were, honestly, in the town we were staying in, the second half of the vacation, we were in this town called Whitefish, and my wife was doing a bunch of, like, serious research on Montana. You'd be shocked at the number of celebrities who have second homes in Montana.
It's beautiful.
Like,
there.
We were half expecting to bump into somebody. We're not sure who, just, like, somebody. It was David Letterman, Tom Brokaw, Michael Keaton, Julia Roberts, Kiefer Sutherland. I mean,
wow.
It's just like this huge list of people who either do or have at one point lived in Montana. My wife's like, oh, we're totally seeing somebody.
And I bet you a beautiful house there costs nothing.
I don't know.
I bet you houses don't even cost that much there.
I don't know.
See, where I want to go, the only celebrity that lives where I want to go is George Clooney. Who I can't stand. I can't stand him.
Well, that's a shame because you might bump into him at the Circle K when you're getting your Reese's peanut butter cups or something.
Circle K in Lake Como.
No Circle K's in Lake Como.
I run into him at the gelato store.
That's a shame. Well, tell George I said hi the next time you see him, if you would. And while you're at it, talk to him about the 2021 Arizona Cardinals, because here we go. It starts this Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. 10 o'clock kickoff here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, and this weirdly unpredictable season for the Cardinals, in which so much is on the line. There's going to be so much to talk about, and just the unpredictable nature of just the preseason predictions is really starting to show itself now. You're looking at power rankings. You're looking at simulations of the season. Over at ESPN, you sent this, and I saw the same thing. ESPN ran a simulation of the season 20,000 times. They picked
Not Kevin Pelton.
No, it was somebody else at ESPN. Ran a simulation of the season 20,000 times. Now, in that simulation, Arizona averages out to about 8 wins and 9 losses. But they picked one specific simulation out of those 20,000 to write about. And in that one, they had the Arizona Cardinals going 6-11 when they wrote about that today.
ESPN had and I like smaller windows, you know, when you're trying to figure out, like, you know, what's the ceiling and everything like that. They had him like as low as 5 wins and as high as like 11. So 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So like a 7-game difference. Like, I don't think you could do something with that much of a disparity in the wins.
Okay.
Because it's like, listen, if they have a good season, they can win 11, a bad season. It's just too much. I think you got to kind of narrow it down a little bit. So, I mean, that's just, I might as well just say they could win 1 or 17 games. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I think you got to narrow it down. It does seem like more people like the Rams and the 49ers. We did something last week when Luke was filling in for you. That there was a lot of people that actually picked the 49ers to win the damn Super Bowl. Like, a bunch of people picked the 49ers to win the Super Bowl or play in the Super Bowl.
Which, given their questions at quarterback,
I know that
roster is stacked. That defense is stacked. They're stacked everywhere but a quarterback.
In December?
I think it's going to be Trey Lance by then. Is that really going to be a Super Bowl quarterback?
He played one game last year. He's going to lead you to the playoffs in the Super Bowl. No rookie's ever like been played in the Super Bowl, like started in the Super Bowl at quarterback.
Yeah, I think it's, that's why I think it's unlikely too. But that roster is so good all over the place. So you got your ESPN projection. Good Morning Football. They had their three guys, Kyle Brandt, Peter Schrager, and now Michael Robinson, who has taken over for Nate Burleson. None of them predicted the Arizona Cardinals to the playoffs. One of them had two NFC West teams. One of them had three NFC West teams. The other one had three NFC West teams.
I think the reason why it's so hard for people to really pick the Cardinals is that they seem to like the Rams and the Seattle and the 49ers.
That's exactly it.
I think it's not that they don't like the Cardinals. It's just like, God, that division's the Rams very well could go to the Super Bowl.
And extend off of your thought, it's not only that they like the other teams better, they can't justify picking four teams from the same division. I can't pick four. And
I think Seattle falls flat on their face this year. I said it last week with Luke. I think Seattle falls flat on their face. They don't have a good offensive line. Again, they don't have a good offensive line. Their defense is trash.
I know.
I love Russell Wilson. You know I love Russell Wilson. But I just think Seattle is the worst team in this division. The Rams have no depth. They spend all their money. They're top heavy. They got all this money invested in five guys.
Right.
So their backups are all cheap players. So they don't have the depth that other teams have. And the 49ers, it's just simply, a quarterback. Garoppolo's missed like 27 games the last 3 years. I mean, mm-hmm. can he stay healthy? And if he doesn't, I mean, can you really count on a kid that played one football game last year coming in and leading a 40? So I think there are major question marks about all of the teams in the West. There's question marks on the Cardinals, too. But I think everybody's got big question marks, and that's why it's hard for me to figure it out.
Here's Kurt Warner on the Bickley and Murata show in the morning this morning, and talking about how the Cardinals are going to have to fight in a very stacked NFC West.
I do think the Cardinals have a chance to be very competitive in the division. I think the division is stacked. I think I look at the Rams right now, just because of some of the question marks with the 49ers coming back from last year, and probably the quarterback position, even though we don't know what Stafford's going to be with the Rams. But that number one defense, playmaking ability, what they've been as an offense and being a playoff team last year, I see them as kind of the team to beat. The 49ers, I think, are going to be really, really good. If they stay healthy, I think they're going to be back competing in the NFC. Seattle, every year, is there and going to be in the mix. I mean, it's almost hard to believe when you think back to last year that Seattle won the division.
And look, I want to agree with you about Seattle. I really do. It's like picking against 10 years of perhaps the most consistently good football team in the NFL.
I know.
They win 10 and 11 games every year.
It's like picking against the Harlem Globetrotters. Like, you know, like they just freaking win.
They just find a way.
I'm telling you, I don't.
You think this is the year?
Give me an over-under on Seattle.
Just off
17 games. What's the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I would say the over-under for Seattle wins, I'll say 9.5.
I'm going under.
Okay.
I'll take the under.
You'll take the under on 9.5.
I don't think they get it. I don't.
You think this is the year it finally gets wonky on them?
Yes, it has to at some point fall apart for Seattle.
Of course it does. But
I think that this is it. And listen, I mean, I love Russell Wilson. They got a terrible offensive line, and their defense is not very good. I don't believe in Seattle. I think Seattle's the team that ends up in last place this year.
There is, now you talk about a range, and maybe you'll find this range a little bit better. Cynthia Freeland from NFL.com.
I think she likes the Cardinals.
She does, as a matter of fact. She projects the Cardinals to have, on her average, you know, simulations, mm-hmm. she has the Cardinals winning on average about 9.1 wins on their simulations. That's good enough for a wild card spot. Listen to her ceiling and her floor. Her ceiling for the Cardinals, 12.4 wins.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Her floor, 7.3 wins.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It's still too many. It's 6. What is she basing it on?
It's 5.
7,
12.
8, 9, 10, 11.
Well, I mean, 12 minus 7 is 5.
But you could have 7 wins, 8 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, 11 wins, 12.
Well, okay, what to you is the range that is acceptable? What's the acceptable Gambo range? 4, that's it?
I think.
Well, that's tight.
Yeah, because I think you're trying to show that, like, I think, yeah, I think that
you're trying to
wide. I mean, anybody can
do the wide range thing. Okay.
Yeah, how do you think the 49ers are going to do? Yeah, I think they're going to win anywhere between like 7 and 13 games.
It's like that Bill Barnwell piece about most improved teams, and he was picking teams that were like 3 and 13.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to improve.
That's low-hanging fruit right there. That's pretty easy to pick
if you want to. Yeah, I got it right. I told you they'd win anywhere between 6 and 17 games.
All right.
I told you.
Ignore the floor.
Uh-huh.
12.5 wins? That's the ceiling for the Arizona Cardinals? That's a pretty high ceiling. You even went wow when I said that number a second ago.
What is she basing it on? Is it just analytics? I don't know her work that well.
It's analytics. It's computer simulations. It's, you know, simulating the season again and again. Here's what she writes. The Cardinals have a boom or bust profile with quarterback and secondary play both flagging as strongly influential factors. As far as the quarterback is concerned, Kyler Murray earns at least 34 total touchdowns in about 60% of the simulations, which is a very high percentage in this exercise. In other words, her simulations are telling her Kyler Murray's going to have a year. Kyler Murray's going to have a big year, and that's why she's got them going to the playoffs. And for the record,
she is the only person I think that has a ceiling that high.
I think you're right.
That's a high ceiling.
I mean,
so that's 12-5.
The Cardinals have a higher ceiling than the Rams. The Cardinals have a higher ceiling than the San Francisco 49ers in her model. She projects both of those teams to have more wins than the Cardinals when it's all said and done. And by the way, she agrees with you about the Seahawks. She has them last.
Okay.
In the division. I mean, not
Do you
by
know
a
if
lot,
they win
but...
12 games, you know what's going to happen? Cliff Kingsbury's getting a contract extension.
Yeah.
This talk about Cliff on the hot seat. They win 12 football games. He's going into the last year of his deal. He signed a 4-year deal. He goes into the last year of his deal. He's got a contract extension.
Well, no question. Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast?
Yes.
We've already established that Gambo has. Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. Gambo listens back to it every day on his way home. It's the Burns and Gambo podcast.
I really don't.
It's brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. It was our first look at the Wildcats since 70-7, and it wasn't a win. There still were some positives out of that revamped U of A football team. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo show. Burns and Gambo here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. NFL action 2 days from now. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. And, of course, the Cardinals open the season over the weekend. But it was a very full weekend of college football to talk about. There was a lot that happened. And we've already talked a little bit about UCLA's win over LSU, about everything that happened in the Pac-12 North, how the teams up there went 1-5, and even the one team that won was Oregon, and they were trailing earlier in the fourth quarter against Fresno State. It was a mess up in the North. In the South, it was much, much better for the ranked teams down there. U of A is not a ranked team, but I would imagine if you're a U of A football fan, yeah, you're probably disappointed your team couldn't finish. You showed a lot better against BYU than I would imagine people were expecting you
to
show.
I don't know. They didn't. I never felt like BYU was in danger of losing the game. But, you know, Arizona got down by a few scores early. It was their 13th loss in a row. They've lost 13 straight. The last time they won a game was over 700 days ago. It was October 5th, 2019, the last time U of A won a football game. They've lost 3 in a row to BYU. I did like the quarterback Gunnar Cruz. I did like him. He moved the team up and down the field. He had a really good connection with Berry Hill. Berry Hill was great in that game. BYU had a real hard time stopping Berry Hill. It seemed like when they needed a play, they got it. Gunnar Cruz, he threw 45 passes in the game, Burns. They were down. So, you know, he had to throw the ball quite a bit. The kicker missed a couple of field goals. You know, that really hurt, especially one early. So I didn't think that they played great. They didn't play well enough to win, but they weren't embarrassed. It's not like they went out there and they got beat by, you know, 4 touchdowns.
No, I mean for a program that's lost 13 games in a row, for a program that hasn't won a football game in 700 days, okay? You were there missed opportunities? Tons. Were there opportunities where they were inside or at or inside the 35-yard line and they didn't come away with as many points as they should have? Absolutely.
Yeah, got to make those field goals.
You got to make those field goals. You got to convert on those opportunities. But for a team that was that bad last year and was expected to be, I mean, there are some people who
lost by one score.
There are some people who don't think U of A is going to win a game this year. I have to think after playing well enough to beat BYU, nobody thinks U of A is not going to win a game anymore, right? Like, they will get a couple at some point this year. They played BYU well enough that I think they're going to... Some people thought they were going to go winless this year. I just don't think that's going to be the case after what happened.
We know this isn't their year. You know what they got to do this year? They got to be competitive. I mean, they got to show teams out there that they play hard and they're competitive.
That happened.
That's what they got to do. They just got to be competitive. You lose a bunch of games and you're competitive. It's a good start for Jed Fish. It's a good start for him. You don't want to get blown out and beat by 5-6 touchdowns. And so now they may. There'll be a game or two where they get annihilated because they just don't have the talent. He's building for the future. He's building for the future, but he's got to play games with what he has now. You still got to play a season. You can't say, hey, I got to wait because I just recruited these kids. I got to wait 2 years. No, you got to play this year and next year with a lot of the guys that were from the previous coaching staff. And you got to try to get the most out of them and try to build a culture and environment and try to get these kids competitive. So they were competitive against BYU. I liked their quarterback. I thought that Gunnar Cruz did a good job. They got a great wide receiver in Berry Hill. But I did like some of the things I saw with U of A.
Jed Fish after the game.
Yeah, we did not finish that game off. And we felt we had a really good opportunity to win that football game. And we didn't get that done. Hats off to BYU. They battled. They came out strong. They came out physical. It was a good game right off the bat, all the way through, and they battled, and then they responded when needed to respond after the little bit of the momentum shift going into the fourth quarter.
For not looking at the Pac-12, and we're talking about week one of the college football season, I don't know how you don't start with Alabama.
It's
and
over. The season's over. No, I'm not kidding.
They looked.
I watched that entire game from start to finish. I was tweeting about it. Bryce Young is unbelievable. That kid is so freaking good. Bryce Young. He tied a record set by Joe Namath in his first game with all those four touchdown passes in the debut. It breaks the record that was shared by Mac Jones and Joe Namath that broke the record. They were just unreal. They lost all those players.
Najee Harris
lost.
And Mac Jones and Devontae
Leatherwood,
Smith. And it's like, yeah, big deal.
Right, Jameson Williams, John Metchie. I mean, that kid is so good, the wide receiver Metchie. He was unreal. Williams was fantastic in that game. They made Derek King, the Miami quarterback, they sacked him like four or five times. They beat the hell out of him. I mean, this is why there's no hope. Miami was, they destroyed Miami in a neutral site game. It was like bringing the sheep to slaughter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it was, the sheep to slaughter. Here you go, Miami. I mean, that's a top 20 team that got annihilated by Alabama. I mean, this is a team that lost six players to the NFL's first round last year. Six. They had 500 yards against Miami. Miami's supposed to be a top 20 team, and they didn't belong on the same field. And that kid, we didn't know how good that kid was going to be. Bryce Young. He was the best quarterback I saw this week.
He was phenomenal.
He was the best quarterback that I watched this week.
Halfway through the third quarter, it's 41-3. It's 41-3.
He's
halfway
like playing.
The third quarter, you're like, what am I watching this for?
But he's like playing like Frogger. He's like playing Frogger. I'm going to go up and I'm going to come back and I'm going to cross and I'm going to go up and I'm going to. He's Frogger. Remember the game Frogger where you go in the log, then you go back, then you go in the log? He would go up and then he'd come back and then he'd go sideways and he'd go up to find these passing lanes. And I was just like, it was like watching Frogger. That kid is so freaking good. He was the best quarterback that he's a freshman.
Yeah.
He was the best quarterback I've seen this week.
Now, I'm sure they'll be fine when it's all said and done, but as Stuart Mandel pointed out in his weekly column looking back on the college football week that was,
yeah,
Clemson's margin for error now is pretty slim. Their schedule the rest of the way is pretty easy because it's mostly ACC and they should be okay. But by losing to Georgia the way they did, they've put themselves in a position now where if they trip up one time in the ACC, that's it. That's two losses, and they're probably not going to get where they want to go. So while Alabama looks like they've already reserved their spot in the college football party,
yeah,
usually one of those spots is reserved for Clemson. They don't have a lot of margin for error now to get one of those spots after losing to Georgia.
Yeah, listen, I was high on the quarterback. He got sacked seven times. Uwe Angalale. Did I get it right? Uwe Angalale.
Sounds pretty
Mitch, what do you got,
close.
Mitch?
I've got
Uwe Angalale.
Uwe Angalale.
Yeah, Uwe Angalale. He got sacked seven times. You know how many times Trevor Lawrence got sacked all of last year?
Fourteen. Okay.
He got sacked 14 times all last year.
Just guessing.
Uwe Angalale got sacked seven times. I mean, they scored 3 points. Their offense scored 3 points.
Georgia's defense is legit. So Kirby Smart is a legit defensive coordinator.
But does it give you hope that Georgia can beat Alabama? Georgia doesn't play Alabama. They don't play LSU. And they don't play Texas A&M. They don't play any of those teams. Does it give you hope that Georgia can beat Alabama the way they play defense against Clemson?
No.
Ah, yeah, that's what I thought too.
No. One word? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I hope. Look, all I can hope for college football at this point is that every single week is as entertaining as this past week was, because I think in the end, Alabama is going to be the class of all of this, and it's all just an opening act for
Alabama. I'll take Alabama and give anybody the field.
I would not take that bet.
I will take Alabama and give everybody the field.
I would not take that bet against you, not one bit. When we come back, he is supposed to be one part of the Cardinals' brand-new linebacking duo, but how much will we see Isaiah Simmons at other spots within the Arizona defense? That we'll talk about next on the Burns and Gambo Show. So away we go on this Cardinals season. It's game week. The Tennessee Titans on Sunday morning, 10 o'clock kickoff. You'll hear it here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. And all the questions about the Arizona Cardinals will start to get some answers. And maybe it's not at the top of everybody's list, but I think it's safe to say that it is somewhere on everybody's list. the linebacking duo of Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons and how they're going to do. Now, Simmons, we've got some experience with. We've got some game film, if you will, to look at of how he did last year. And we saw him get better as the season went on. But obviously, expectations are much, much higher this year. We were talking about him a little bit earlier with the Malcolm Butler surprise retirement. You pointed out that our buddy Mike Jarecki pointed out on his podcast, look, in a pinch, there's a guy who could play a little cornerback for you.
Well,
if you
he
had
does.
To.
I mean, he's going to line up, and we've talked about this before on our show, that he's going to play five positions, right? I mean, he's going to play five different positions. I mean, in college, he played nine. He'll play five positions. Like, so he can cover tight ends. He can cover running backs. He can rush the passer. It's a lot of things you could do with Isaiah Simmons.
I know, but isn't there a part of you that feels a little uncomfortable saying, okay, Malcolm Butler retired. He's not on this team, but it's going to be okay. We've got Isaiah Simmons to cover guys. Isn't there a part of you that is a little uncomfortable making the leap of suggesting that he is going to be able to somehow replace Malcolm Butler in that regard in only his second season?
I don't think he replaces Malcolm Butler. I think he's just another addition to what you have up your arsenal, what you have up your sleeve to put out, roll out there, corner. The guy who's replacing Malcolm Butler is, Marco Wilson.
Right.
I mean, that's the guy that's replacing Malcolm Butler. I mean, Marco Wilson's going to play. You're in nickel 75% of the time. You're in nickel coverage 75% of the time. They'll play with Alford and Byron and Marco Wilson 75% of the time. I do think that it depends on what the other team rolls out there. I
mean, Of course.
Are they rolling out two tight ends and one back? Are they rolling, what personnel are they in? 10, 11, 12? What are they in? I mean, if they're rolling out four wide receivers, you might have Isaiah go out there and, cover somebody or cover the back. And so I think that you'll have Isaiah as like a slot corner at times.
I guess what I'm saying is the leap. Can he play five positions at the NFL level? I'm sure he can. Can he play them well at the NFL level? That, to me, is the leap I'm not ready to make when it comes to Isaiah Simmons.
It's the fear of Deion Buchanan. I really do. I think it's the fear of, here's a guy that could play safety, but then he could play linebacker. We could have him rush the passer. We could have him cover guys. There was this thing that Deion Buchanan, man, I wish he would have just concentrated on one position, and they kind of mixed them around. Versatility is a nice trait to have because you could do all of these different things. I mean,
but if you can't do them well, what's the point?
We don't know that he can't do it well.
We can assume that he's going to do all of them well right now. I think eventually he'll get to that point. I don't know if he's there right now. He talked about playing multiple positions, talking about Isaiah Simmons, and said he certainly has interest in doing it.
It interests me for sure, just with me having a background like that. Effectively, I believe that I could play like multiple positions here. I don't really have an exact number, but I definitely believe that I could effectively play multiple positions just with the different skill sets that I bring to the game.
If he can, he might be the key to the whole thing for the Cardinals defensively.
You just hit it.
If he could be the whole key.
Could be the key to everything. If you go back to the Kansas City game, he was in the slot covering Hardman. He was covering Kelsey. He's going to cover backs, receivers, and tight ends. He could rush the passer. He could drop to safety when Buda blitzes. He could play slot cornerback. So he might be. I mean, he might be the key to everything they do because of his versatility. Can you have him cover a tight end? Yeah. Can you have him cover a running back? Yeah. Can he cover a wide receiver? Sure. Can he rush the passer? Yes. Can he play safety? Yeah. Can he play slot cornerback? Yeah. I've got him playing five different positions, not nine like college, but I've got him playing five different positions. And if he excels with his versatility, it could be a big boost for that defense.
It could. And I hate to assume that he can't. It's one of those things where I don't think you
want to say it before.
Yeah. I don't think you can pencil it in and say, okay, it's going to happen. He's going to be great at all of them because he was great in Clemson at all of them. That's a leap that I'm not willing to make after just 1 year of watching him play. He was asked about the limit to how many different positions he can play, and he spoke about it much in the way you are, too.
The more you go about it, the easier things will be because you'll hear a call and you'll just think conceptually opposed to, okay, this is my responsibility, this is what I got to do. So, I'm sure I could learn everything. I'm not going to line up as a three tech or a nose, but, just bouncing around different places in the secondary. Probably leave the corner jobs to them, being out there. But I definitely feel like I could bounce around. But as of right now, you know, I'm just trying to make sure that I master the inside linebacker position before I even, you know, want to branch out to other things.
Because it's just one of those deals where with Malcolm Butler gone now, it's just one fewer thing to feel certain about defensively for the Cardinals, right? I mean, Zaven Collins, we think he's going to do well. We don't know for sure. Isaiah Simmons, we assume he's going to do well. We don't know for sure, right? There's Buddha's great. JJ's great, assuming he can stay on the field. Chandler Jones, great, assuming he can stay on the field. Right? It's just one of those where he, like we said, he might be the key to the whole thing, because if he really is, I don't want to assume he can be all that, but man, if he can be even a shred of that at this level, that's a tremendous weapon for the Cardinals to be able to deploy.
It is. And you know, listen, I think right from the get-go, we know that Jordan Hicks is going to play, you know, a bunch. And I'm glad they held on to him. And they're glad they didn't trade him for a fifth-round pick or a sixth-round pick or anything like that. They resisted any temptations. They held on to him, and now it looks like he's got a role.
Yeah.
You got a veteran leader there that can really help. And I think it's great that Zaven's got somebody to bounce stuff off of, not only during the week of practice, but also as the game's going on. You know, as the game's going on, you've got somebody to say, hey, listen, this is what I'm seeing right now, okay? So I think that he could really help. So I think that the linebacker group is extremely talented and extremely athletic. They're just lacking experience. And could that be the downfall of the defense? I don't know. I mean, some people will say yes. But every team, Patrick Queen was great last year for the Ravens.
True. Good point.
We just talked about the Tennessee Titans. They're going to start Elijah Molden, the third-round cornerback. They're not starting Caleb Farley. They're going to start Elijah Molden. Every team relies on rookies.
Yeah.
Every single team.
Cliff, real quick, was asked about how much Jordan Hicks is going to play this year.
Yeah, Jordan will have a nice role. He's a guy who continues to be a great leader on this team and has played a lot of snaps in this defense and really has a great feel for it. I think he had his best camp that I've seen since I've been here, and I know we're fired up to watch him play on Sunday.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to see how many times Hicks, Zaven Collins, and Isaiah Simmons are on the field at the same time. I bet it's more than I think. Like, in my mind, I'm thinking it won't be very much. I bet it's more than I think. Whatever that number is. Like, I'm thinking
Isaiah could do so many different things. It's not about, you know, because you can, because Isaiah doesn't have to come off the field. You want to go two tight ends and have him cover a tight end? Fine. You want to have him cover the back out of the backfield? Fine. They line up four wides and you want to have him cover one of the wide receivers? Okay, you could do that. So I do think that his versatility allows them to play Hicks a little bit more.
The Arizona Cardinals home opener is next Sunday. We're giving you the chance to be there for the return of the Red Sea by texting Red Sea, REDSEA, right now to 620-620. Listen for your name starting next Monday at 735, 135, and 335. You could win a pair of tickets to the home opener. Plus, one grand prize winner will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey courtesy of Pristine Auction. That's Red Sea to 620-620. No one in their right mind would have ever thought that we'd be 2 days away from the start of the NFL regular season and still no official announcement on the status of Larry Fitzgerald. Is he still leaving the door open? You decide next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Remember last year, every single Wednesday, we play a cut or two from Patrick Peterson's All Things Covered podcast. And, oh, did you hear what Patrick Peterson said this week? Did you hear what Patrick Peterson said this week?
He continues to think that they're playing the Tennessee Titans. That was a topic last week.
It does.
He continues to think that they're playing the Titans.
You missed it, Bernsey. On his podcast, he talked like for 2.5-3 minutes about how excited he is about matching up with the Titans.
Stop it.
Yep.
Stop it.
Yep. 100%.
And we've triple checked, right?
We're sure
the Tennessee Titans are not on the Vikings schedule.
Multiple times.
We looked at that roster, man. They're not playing the Titans.
Love of all that is good. Patrick, get over it.
I know.
Get over it.
I'll tell you, usually, you know, when guys leave that you like, you want them to do well. God, I really want Patrick Peterson to fall flat on his freaking face. Like, you know, Dan Marley left, or, you know, when guys leave. There's certain guys like, okay, I didn't want Nash to do well when he went to the Lakers.
Yeah,
but Patrick Peterson didn't go to, like, Seattle or San Francisco. He went to Minnesota. But, man, I want that guy to fall flat on his face.
Okay, but it's weird. Like, usually that emotion kicks in right when they leave. When he left and went to the Minnesota Vikings, hey, fare thee well. Good luck. You know, I hope it all works out for you. You're a great Arizona Cardinal. It's been over time where I want him to fail. Like, my initial emotion wasn't, I want him to fail. But now, after all of this crap, I'm kind of with you. I kind of want to see him fail.
But I think
I didn't feel that way at the beginning, but I do now. It's like
the suspension and not being able to tackle Jared Goff, and then there was just so many negatives these last couple of years with Patrick Peterson, and always just the whining and the complaining about, oh, they got to make me run with a cornerback across the field. I don't want to do that. Yeah. That's like, oh, my God, grow up. I really don't want him to do well. I hope he flops.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying I didn't feel that way at first when he left for the Vikings. Like, at first, I'm like, hey, good luck.
We wanted Bolden to do well.
Yeah.
Like, when Anquan Bolden left, I'm rooting for Anquan.
So I didn't know that about Pat Pete and the Titans. That's because I was gone all last week. That's funny. I was bringing it up because I think now this Larry Fitzgerald Let's Go show on SiriusXM.
You think that's the new one?
Is this our new All Things Covered? Are we going to be playing cuts from Larry Fitzgerald every single week from the SiriusXM Let's Go show?
Until he says he's retired, yes.
Okay.
Because what's the topic? He still doesn't know if he wants to play or not.
Great, Jim. I miss the interaction with my teammates, but I'm in a good place. Spending time with the family, playing a little golf, doing a little travel, get a chance to spend some time with people that you never really get a chance to spend at this time of the year. The desire to play is the same as it's been, and I'm very comfortable with that. But you never know what tomorrow holds. But right now, I'm very content. I'm very content.
Once he says that, you never know what the future holds. Look, listen, there's one scenario, and only one scenario, in which I see him coming back. The Cardinals suffer a major injury at one of the wide receiver spots, and they call up Larry Fitzgerald and said, hey, we'll give you 2 weeks. Get ready. We need you. And that's it. Do you remember when Cotton Fitzsimmons called Kevin Johnson?
Yeah, I do.
Hey, KJ. KJ, what are you doing? I'm sitting here watching I'm watching Days of Our Lives. You think you can get to Phoenix by tomorrow? Why? I need you. You got to play.
We got no point guards.
I need a point guard.
We're out. They're all gone.
All our guys are hurt right now. they did. They called him out of retirement. Johnson, you want to come back and play? And so I think that's the only thing that would enable Larry. To me, I think he's retired. I've said it all along. I don't think he's coming back and playing. He's certainly not playing for anybody else. But if the Cardinals suffered an injury and the season looked like it was off to a promising start, could I see them calling Larry Fitzgerald? Yeah, I could see them calling Fitzgerald.
I was listening to our new midday show, Wolf and Luke, when I was driving in, and Wolf was kind of asking the question and making the point. I mean, what is he waiting for? And I think what you just explained a second ago, I think it can really reasonably be the only thing that he is waiting for. The only reason why he hasn't officially retired the paperwork. Because remember, the clock doesn't start for him getting into Canton until he files the paperwork and says, I retire. So he hasn't clearly done that yet. And if he wants to start the clock for getting in the Hall of Fame, he's going to need to officially retire the paperwork and say that he's done. So why is he not doing that? What is the one thing keeping him to keep that door even the slightest bit open?
And
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. It's the what if somebody needs me? And maybe it's not just the Cardinals. What if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers suffer a debilitating injury at wide receiver and Tom Brady and BA give him a call and say, hey, baby, come on over here. Win a Super Bowl with us. I don't think it just has to be the Cardinals. I think it could be somebody else, too, who gives him that call midseason.
Listen, Jim Gray, I'm not a Jim Gray fan at all, like zero. Less than zero.
You've made that abundantly clear now.
God, the guy's terrible. I can't stand Jim Gray.
Don't mince words, Gambo. Tell us what you really think.
Yeah. I told you. I don't know if I told the story with you. Went out to dinner with him once with Brian Colangelo. We went out to dinner with Jim Gray. And for like an hour, all the guy did was talk about himself.
I don't know if I would have wanted an invitation to that dinner, or I'm just so grateful that I didn't get one of that dinner.
Yeah, it was earlier in the Suns years, and we went out to grab. We just grabbed. Jim Gray was in town, and Brian was. You want to go? Yeah, I went for you. We grabbed some dinner at I think it was Pizzeria Bianco, and then Jim Gray was there. My God, an hour later, I had a freaking headache. I was like, give me some Excedrin. My God, I've never heard a guy talk about himself as much as Jim Gray talked about himself. Seriously. I mean, I ran to the 7-Eleven and I bought some Excedrin. My head was pounding after listening to that guy talk. But how about a simple question, Jim? Like, hey, are you staying in shape? Are you working out? Well, what are you doing are you doing anything to where you could play if somebody asked you?
Well, here's Fitz on how great he feels physically.
I feel great, man. Honestly, I don't have any issues. I've never really had any major problems or injuries when I played, never had a surgery. So I feel great, Jim. I really do. You know, I wake up and, you know, no bones crack a little bit, but nothing too bad. And, you know, I feel like I can do everything that I want to do, chase the kids around. My son still can't beat me on one-on-one. He can't get open on me in any of the pass routes. So I'm still moving around pretty good.
When I wake up, a few bones broken.
A few bones creak and crack. But
I tell my friends that all the time. It's the first like 4 or 5 steps out of bed every morning. My first ouch, 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 ouch. Okay.
Hey, I'm fine.
Okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. Put one foot in front of the other, and soon you'll be walking out the door. But so those first 5 steps are terrible.
Does Jim Gray just ask him every week? I mean, is that how this is going to go now?
But I mean, like,
is it every? So I'm asking an honest question. Every single week, does Jim Gray say, "Okay, it's week 3, Fitz. What do you think? It's week 8, Fitz. What do you think?"
I think if an injury occurs, you ask if that team's contacted you. Hey, this team X just lost a wide receiver in week 2 to an injury. Has that team contacted you? I mean, you keep it fresh.
Yeah.
But here's the thing I'm not getting out of Jim Gray. Has anybody asked Fitz to play this year? Did any teams contact you about playing? Anybody? Did anybody contact you? Did you have any options? I mean, this is what you don't get out of Jim Gray. You don't get these out of Jim Gray because he'd probably want to talk about himself. But ask, you know, Fitz, were there any options for you? Did anybody contact you in the offseason? Did anybody offer you a contract? Anything.
Sorry, I'm just laughing at you and
me.
Jim Gray at dinner.
Look at me. Me. Hello, what would you like to order the appetizers? Did you know I'm Jim Gray?
Oh, God. You can have dinner you can have dinner with Jim Gray and Gamble, or you can go through a drive-through line. Which drive-through line am I going through?
Man.
The Arizona Cardinals have released their depth chart as they prepare to open the season this Sunday in Tennessee. And while there weren't any huge shockers, there are a couple surprises, and we'll tell you about them next on the Burns and Gambo Show.